Welcome to the Cuban Family Roots Podcast, a monthly podcast dedicated to discussing Cuban history and ancestral roots. I'm your host, Aileen Vega, podcasting from Woodbridge, New Jersey. As a genealogy enthusiast, I created the Cuban Family Roots Podcast to help others in their genealogical journey. I conduct interviews with Cuban researchers and geneticists, authors, and those with knowledge and expertise in Cuban history and genealogical research. I'm committed to conducting interviews that will point to genealogical information and resources to lead family historians in the right path to finding their family roots. From 1492, when Columbus claimed the island for Spaniards, to present-day Cuban, our history has been rich and traumatic. Now our family history is slowly vanishing due to archival despair. Cubans inside and outside the island yearn to capture, learn our past, our origins, and our ancestral roots. Knowledge of our history is the key to keeping our Cuban family roots alive. I hope you enjoy listening to each episode as much as I enjoy producing them. The Cuban Family Roots Podcast can be heard on Spotify, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, and many other platforms. You can support us by simply listening and engaging. You're listening to episode 3 of the Cuban Family Roots Podcast, The Irish in Cuba. I'm your host, Aileen Vega, podcasting from Woodbridge, New Jersey. Today is March 1st, 2021, and we have an exciting episode. But before we begin, I want to wish our listeners a happy St. Patrick's Day. Two exciting announcements. Our listenership is growing, and we can now be heard on various podcast platforms. Now, before we begin, I'll lay out the foundation for what is to come. In our first segment, we'll discuss two Irish migrations, the flight of the wild geese and the railroad workers. In our second segment, our guest, a Cuban American with Irish ancestry, recounts what led his Irish ancestors to Cuba and how he has continued his grandfather's legacy of finding their Irish roots. He explains how his genealogical journey led him to finding his Irish clan, the O'Hallorans. In our third and last segment, we conclude with our genealogy tip of the day, where our guest provides tips for how Cubans can start researching their Irish roots. This podcast was created thanks to Anchor Platform, and we will be right back. The Flight of the Wild Geese. In 1691, the Treaty of Limerick was signed, which led the Irish Jacobite forces to depart from Ireland to France and Spain. This migration took place over the 17th and 18th century, and it is informally known as the Flight of the Wild Geese. The Irish favored France over Spain because it was Roman Catholic. As soon as they arrived in France, they entered into military service. The name Wild Geese came about because the Irish smuggled luxury commodities in exchange for high-quality Irish wool and Irish military recruits. Those Irish recruits were equally priced and referred to in the ship's cargo log as the Wild Geese. They did this to hide the illegitimate recruitments. This name was stuck, and they were known as the Wild Geese. The soldiers were recognized for their courage and their fighting skills, and so they formed the Irish Brigades. They were most prominent in the service of France. These soldiers were active in Austrian, Italian, and Spanish armies as well. In fact, in the later decades, the Wild Geese continued to flood into continental Europe from Ireland. The Irish troops in Spain service returned to Ireland and fought in the armies of Confederate Ireland, a movement of the Irish Catholics. The Confederates were defeated, and around 34,000 Irish Confederate troops fled Ireland to seek service in Spain. Some defected to French service, where they felt conditions were better, but during the Napoleon Wars, there were still three Irish infantry in the Spanish army: Irlanda Infantry, Hibernia, and Utopia. Some of these regiments came to serve in the Spanish colony of Cuba. This information was taken from the article by Rafael Fernandez Moya, the Irish Presence in the History and Place Names of Cuba, Volume 5, November 2007. Coming up next, the migration of the Irish railroad workers. We'll be right back. And now, let's talk about the Irish railroad workers in Cuba. In 1835, 300 Irish railroad workers had been contracted in New York to work for the Cuban Railway Commission. It was estimated that the workforce of 1,500 men would complete the excavation. The Irish recruits are described as being semi-skilled with experience in explosives and railroad construction. Many of the men either die due to poor labor conditions, while others may have fled or stayed in Cuba, but this number till today is unknown. The first stretch of railway to Bejucal was inaugurated in 1837, and the line there from Guines was put into service the following year. During my cemetery project of Bejucal on findagrave.com, as I was uploading pictures of tombstones, I came across the Murphy family tombstone. Who knows? Maybe they were descendants of the railroad workers. Coming up next, Prohibition. We'll be right back. Prohibition and its tie to Irish settlement in Cuba. Prohibition in the United States was a constitutional ban on the production, importation, transportation, and sale of alcoholic beverages. This ban extended from 1920 to 1933. Irish influx to Cuba occurred at different points in time, although we don't have a lot of evidence. It's been said that during Prohibition, many Irish bar owners from Boston and New York settled in Havana, Cuba. In fact, an Irishman called Donovan moved his entire bar from Newark, New Jersey to Havana. Before we conclude this segment, I want to mention, much before the potato famine, Irish people migrated to the Spanish slave colony of Cuba. Some of the first registered settlement of Irish communities in Cuba date back to 1817, though Irish individuals and families found their way either voluntarily or by force. We cannot conclude this episode without mentioning the notable Irish generals, merchants, and other sons of Ireland, such as O'Reilly, O'Donnell, O'Farrell, O'Gavin, all who identify with the anti-colonial struggles of Cuba. We'll be right back. And now we will conclude this segment by mentioning all the notable Irish generals, merchants, and other sons of Ireland, such as the O'Reilly, O'Donnells, and O'Farrells, among others, whose surnames can be seen all across the island of Cuba. In the 19th century, many people arrived in Cuba. Amongst them were the Irish migrants, who, although few in numbers, played a significant part in the affairs of the island. They were engaged in occupations that were crucial to the development of Cuba. Many Irish merchants had important roles in Cuba's international maritime trade, and also in the introduction of machinery, railways to install, operate, and maintain the steam engines that were being introduced into the sugar mills, mines, and railways. Irish professionals were noticeable in areas such as medicine, teaching, and engineering. The Irish planters escaped the abolition of slavery and established themselves with their slaves in the Cuban countryside. It is also important to point out that a significant number of Irish migrants in Cuba were also women. And now, let's mention the notable Irish and Cuban Irish whose names and surnames will forever be engraved in the history of our island. Ambrosio Duany was a councilor and representative, commander of the city's militia, and owner of a sugar plantation. He died in Santiago de Cuba in 1738 and one of his descendants, Andrés Duany and Valiente, received the title of Count of Duany in 1864. Throughout the 18th century, citizens with the surname Duany held office as council members and mayors of the city hall of Santiago de Cuba. In the middle of the 20th century, a central neighborhood in the city was named Castillo Duany, after Demetrio Duany. In June 1798, Sebastian Candelan O'Regan, son of Vicente Candelan, originally from Ballymahon in the county of Longford, was named political and military governor of Santiago de Cuba. Two geographical points in Cuba bear the name Candelan. One of them is a Cupeya neighborhood in the municipal district of Morón, and the other is a neighborhood in Matanzas near the border with Sahuala Grande. General O'Reilly is remembered for having organized the military forces on the island's black and mulatto militias. In honor of his achievement, one of the main streets of the historic center of Havana was given his name. Also, a stop on the railway line situated in the municipal district Quemado de Güines in Sahuala Grande in the central region of the country also bears the name O'Reilly. Richard O'Farrell and O'Daly was a native of the Caribbean island of Montserrat, a descendant of a family whose lineage traces back to County Longford. The surname O'Farrell appears in the family tree of almost all of the Havana families with notable titles. In the neighborhood of La Víbora in Havana, there's a street called O'Farrell and another called Alcalde O'Farrell after one of the Irishman descendants named Juan Ramón O'Farrell, who shared the city hall of Havana at the beginning of the 20th century. In fact, today, two splendid mansions bear the name O'Farrell in the old Havana area of the country's capital. One is Hotel O'Farrell, which is the home of the Archbishop of Havana. In 1801, Jose Campincher, an infantry colonel, was governor of Bayamo in the eastern region of Cuba. Juan Thierry and Lacy was responsible for mapping Isla de Pino, modern-day Isla de la Juventud. He went with the mission of analyzing the pine trees to see if they could be used for the ships in the Spanish Navy. In honor of his contribution, the geography and northernmost point of Island de Pino was called Punta de Thierry. In Havana, Juan Thierry was the engineer and general and twice mayor of the city. In 1816, Thierry was governor of Matanzas, a city where one of the streets also bear his name. On the 21st of December, 1826, a ship called Revenue entered the Baracoa port in the extreme east of the island with 40 people on board, arriving from the United States. These settlers were mainly from Ireland, Scotland, and the United States. The Irish group was formed by the laborer Jose Ocon and his wife, Richard Powers, his wife and child, Lawrence Hager, his wife and child, Robert Irving, Peter Higgins, Matthew McNamara, the carpenter Patrick Oven, James McNamara, John Blakeney, Simon Dorn, and the blacksmith Michael McNamara. In June 1855, a boy named Juan Burns, whose father was Gregorio and his mother was Margarita Burns, was baptized in Havana. This surname became part of the heart of the intellectual community of Matanzas. This happened through the educational work of Juana Burns de Clayton, the first headmistress of the School for Poor Girls. This school would later become the Casa de Beneficencia, founded in 1846, and later through the literary work of the poet and revolutionary journalist Bonifacio Burns. During 1861 through 1936, Bonifacio Burns earned the title of National Poet of his patriotic independence work. A street in the Los Olmos neighborhood in Santiago de Cuba bears his name. One of the streets in Cienfuegos was given the name of the infamous governor of the island, Leopoldo O'Donnell. Many Irish surnames appear as part of the toponymy of Cuba. Besides those already mentioned, names like O'Nathan, O'Kelly, O'Burke, O'Donnell, Cummins, Maiden, and Campbell, amongst many other, are the perpetual testament of the Irish in Cuba's history. Coming up next, my interview with Adonis Reyes, a descendant of one of the Cuban Irish families in Havana, the O'Hallorans. Thank you for joining us, Adonis. Today, as you know, we're talking about the Irish presence in Cuba. And the reason we have invited you is because you have Irish ancestors that came to Cuba in the 1700s. And we would like to know more about your experience and how you were able to develop your family tree. So why don't you tell us, how did you get started in your genealogy and finding your Irish ancestors?
First of all, I'd like to say thank you, Eileen, for inviting me for this. And, you know, very, very excited about this opportunity. I appreciate it. But yeah, I found out about that I had Irish inheritance because of my granddad. My granddad used to tell me, you know, when I was a kid, probably like 9 or 10 years old, he used to tell me that his dad was doing research and that his last name was an Irish last name. At the time, they didn't know how to pronounce it. So the last name, how you pronounce it in English, is O'Halloran. And how they'll say it was O'Halloran. So they wouldn't make the pronunciation right. So that was the first time I heard the last name was said like that, O'Halloran. So it was kind of, for me, it was kind of like intriguing and amazing at the same time that I found out that, you know, Irish, you know, I never imagined that, you know, how we're going to have inheritance from Ireland. I know that I have from Spain and Portugal, but not from Ireland. So the way that it went was something like this. He used to say that his dad was a descendant from Irish that came to Cuba in the mid-18th century. And also that they were noblemen and had a lot of lands in Ireland and England. So my grandfather used to also tell me that his dad had a green folder that had all the information of the O'Halloran family from the first O'Halloran that came to Cuba and all the way to him. So I was very, you know, intrigued, and I asked him, you know, what happened to those papers, those documents? And he said, you know, that in some reason he got mad and he couldn't leave the country, you know, Cuba being a totalitarian regime in 1960s, you couldn't even, you know, talk to your family that were living outside, you know, in America or send any documents. So when my great-grandfather left Cuba in 1967 for America, he left those documents behind and never was able to retrieve them. So my grandfather, after the passing of his dad, he kind of got mad that he couldn't do anything or leave the country or whatever, and he burned those documents. So he burned everything.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
In the backyard, my grandma used to tell me that she saw him burning everything. It's like two folders. But what's amazing about this story is that I started when I was 9 years old, then I stopped because in Cuba, as you know, it's very hard to gather any sort of information on, you know, the records or whatnot that go far back into like 1700s. And so I kind of stopped until 2005. I was able to come over to America and, you know, thanks to the internet, I started doing some research about that last name in particular.
So you never forgot about
never, that. Never. That was something
that in your mind.
Yeah, that was something for me.
Handing in the back of your.
No, it was a quest, and also I promised my grandfather that I would find out what happened to his dad and what happened to, you know, so find out where he came from. And that was where trauma began. So I'd started to, you know, because of the internet, thank God for the internet, I started to looking, you know, doing some research online and in groups and ancestry and family search and all that. And I came across some forums that talk about the Halorans, but you know, in Cuba, but not too much information. Some information like they were there already in the 1800s, early 1800s, but no mention of a name or nothing else.
Let me ask you a question before you move forward in your story. Did Luis O'Halloran, did he come straight from Ireland, or was his migration from Spain to Cuba?
Well, okay, Luis O'Halloran migrated from Ireland to Spain with his wife, and I think he had like 5 or 6 kids. So they went from Ireland to Spain to Cádiz because of the, you know, the
Okay.
problem that was going on with the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church. They were Catholics. A lot of Catholics had.
So this was during the flight of the
Well,
wild
I
geese.
think yeah,
Was that?
yes. So
Okay.
they had to leave Ireland because their belief. So Spain, being a Catholic country, kind of opened up their, you know, doors to all Catholic brethren that came from Ireland. And because most of them were nobles back in Ireland, they also had positions to do in, you know, in the government in Spain, and had, you know, well set, I'll say, you know, like they have businesses, and they're more like able to have a good life in Spain. So that's why they did. They went from Ireland to Spain. They were merchants, and from Spain, the records that I found that talks about Luis and his wife, and this one particular record that I found in San Kitts and Nevis, it's like a island in the Caribbean, very close to Cuba. And they were there selling some land from Pascual's wife's parents that passed away. And they were selling that land to somebody. I don't remember the name, but that's what the first time that I saw their name, you know, Luis O'Halloran and Margaret Scott. Then I was able to find some other documents, like a testament that he had to write on a trip that he made from Cuba to Spain. Because he was trying to go to Ireland because his brother passed away. It was in 1735. He's trying to get to Ireland to claim some lands and properties that his brother left for him, but he wasn't able to do so because of the problems that were going on at the time. So in that testament, he mentioned that he was already in Cuba as for 1719. He was already in Havana. So they're being in Havana from early 18th century. So it's kind of amazing for me to find this information because there I was able to get more information about his family, who his mom was, his dad, what county they were. That's why I was able to find out that his parents, they were cousins, because the O'Halloran last name in Ireland is one of the oldest last names of families in Ireland. They had two clans. They had the clan from County Clare and the clan from County Galway. And my ancestors, they were from both clans. Louise O'Halloran's parents, his mom was from County Clare, and his dad was from County Galway. So it was kind of
So they were both
they both
O'Halorans,
O'Halloran.
both of his
But
parents.
yes,
Oh,
so
wow.
there were different variations of the last name. You can find it without the O and apostrophe, so just O'Halloran, and that's how there's some records that in Spain, for example, the record in Spain that I found. It's only Haller. They don't put the O with the apostrophe. But in Cuba, they were you know, like put down on records with the O'Haller, the O apostrophe O'Haller. So there's different variations, but the same family, you know. So it was pretty interesting to find
Right.
those sort of you know, little bits of information that I could gather, and I was able to kind of continue my research. So.
That's great.
You know, so it's for me, it's been like a, like I said, it was been a roller coaster because, and I want to mention that I want to say thank you to you because you got me in contact with someone in Cuba that was able to trace back all the inhabitants in Cuba and all the documents that my great grandfather had and my grandfather burned down. It's amazing because right now I'm pretty much I'll say 95 or 97% with all those documents in my possession. So it's pretty amazing. Thank you so much.
So you have been able to recover them,
Yeah,
not necessarily from him, but you have been able to replace what he had by through your own
yes.
means.
I went back following his steps, and for a little bit of information I gathered from the documents and in from England, I was able to search and look for a specific document so I could get more information, more specific information, and from then names and dates and all.
So, who else did you contact anyone else here in America after you came? Did you find Luis
Well,
O'Halloran?
no. One of the things that I was able also to do through the groups and Ancestry, I was always looking for information there, posting questions, and there was one time that I got to one of those groups, and I saw a similar question to like my question. It was from a family, Halloran, the Halloran last name, that they live in Puerto Rico. And I tried to contact them. I got in touch with them through another person on that group. And at the end, when we compare information, the information that I had and the one they had was some sort of somehow similar, but there was like the last name was kind of backwards. And what happened was that I never knew that my great grandfather had a brother that came over in the like 1920s, like late 1920s, to work for some cousins in Tampa in a cigar factory. Actually, even before then, he had there was like a factory in Tampa, Ybor City, was O'Halloran cigar factory, and they were all descendants of the O'Halloran from Cuba. Then moved to Tampa and kind of built the city, and they had a cigar factory there. So this cousin, well, I mean, sorry, this brother of my great grandfather's went to work for them. And then being in Tampa, I think being in America also, he wanted to succeed, to be more successful. So what he did was he removed his Spanish last name, so the Aliaga last name, and then kept the O'Halloran. And his name was Jose Jesus, so he kept it to Joseph. So Joseph O'Halloran, you see, and he was fair skin, tall, blue eyes. He was an Irish person, basically. You look at him, and I seen pictures, and he just looked like an Irish person. Also, my great grandfather was like an Irish person. So I found out this information through this group, and all of a sudden I found out that this person was indeed my great grandfather's brother that had been long lost. And so I found a family in Puerto Rico and New York,
Wow.
and then we kept connection. And I remember that when we were talking already, and we were pretty sure that we were related, still the doubts, but I told him. His name is
Right.
Juan O'Halloran. I told him, hey, Juan, I'm gonna go to Cuba and visit. So give me the date, your grandfather's birthday, and I'll go to I know where I have to go because I know for a fact. I mean, I have a hunch that he is my great grandfather's brother. So indeed, that's what happened. I went to Cuba. I went to the records, to the Registro Civil, and I went there and I gave the date and exactly it was. That person was, and then I was able to also get all the other brothers and sisters from my great grandfather and the same information. So I came back to America and I sent that document to him. And he was so happy because he didn't knew that much about that brand of that branch of his family. He didn't know anything about his grandfather, just a little information. And being able to connect that long lost family. For me, it was amazing.
You also told me that Jose Maria O'Halloran was the first,
Yeah, judge.
I think it was a
The
mayor,
first judge
judge
of the
in
city
County.
of Artemisa. Actually, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was also a founder of Artemisa, the early hundreds. Yeah,
Really?
so he owned some land in Artemisa, was now known as Artemisa, but before it used to be called Corral de San Marcos. He owned some land there, and I think some people or neighbors, they're trying to, to create, they wanted to create a town, in that area. So they'll come together and create a town, a city. So that's what, he was part of that. And so, like I said, he was the first judge of the city of Artemisa. The house where he lived still stands today. And, it's like, I think it's a pharmacy, I believe. I have pictures of it. It still stands after almost 200 years. It's amazing.
Wow, that's amazing. You also told me that one of the O'Hallorans played a role in the Cuban Revolutionary War.
Yeah,
Can you tell our listeners
correct,
that little
correct. Yeah, so
story?
there were three brothers, or more than that, but the three brothers that were involved in that were the owners of the O'Halloran's. So they were, the name were Blas, Stanislao, and Rafael O'Halloran, Fernandez O'Halloran. They were the owners of the O'Halloran cigar factories in Tampa. So what happened was, back in 1895, Cuba, they were trying to create a, to go to war for the independence of Cuba from Spain. And the story that went to, to start the war is based off a cigar that was rolled at the O'Halloran cigar factory and taken to Cuba with a secret message in one of the cigars to, I think it was going to be sent to, one of the generals in Havana. And that message was to, all the coordinates and everything, how the war is going to start, when the date for the uprising and all that stuff. And it was pretty amazing because Stanislao O'Halloran was a very close friend with Jose Martí, which is the apostle, of Cuban history, revolutionary history, the 1800s. He was very close friend with Jose Martí, and I think they want a place where to actually come up with this cigar, and so they chose the O'Halloran cigar factory for that to roll the cigar. So it was pretty, there was five Panetella cigars that were made. They're all identical, but the one concealing the message was called the Cigar of Liberty. It was distinguishable because he had two tiny yellow specks on the tobacco wrapper. So then, days later, another patriot named was Miguel Ángel Duque de Estrada, was the one who took the cigars and delivered it to Juan Gualberto Gómez in Havana, who was the insurgent chief of the island of Cuba. So he, Miguel Ángel Duque de Estrada, took the cigars to Havana with the order for the war in 1895. So this is a very, for me, it was a very amazing story also.
Yes, very, very amazing. Let me ask you, can you acquire an Irish or European citizenship as a result of your ancestors
I don't know.
being
I mean,
Irish?
that would be great. It would be awesome if I could do so. I'll be basically the fulfillment, that'll be like the top for this whole thing that I've done from basically my whole life, that'll be amazing to honor my ancestry and my inheritance, being Irish descendant. I mean, hopefully one day, that it could be done. I'm trying. I want to, get more information about that if it's possible to do so. So that'll be awesome, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you been able to find any records in Ireland? Have you been able to move forward
Yeah,
with that
well, yes,
claim?
in
And
Ireland,
what was the experience like?
I found Luis's father's death, not the record itself, but you know the parish where he was, you know, the records is settled, right? So it was in Tuam, and I think it's another county in Dagua City. It's a place called Tuam, and it was from the 17 I think it was 1760, no, 1756 or 60. And it shows that, you know, he was the day that he passed away, and it's, you know, on those records. That's basically what I was able to find in Ireland. You had to also know that in Ireland, a lot of churches were, you know, Catholic churches were burnt down, you know, for the Anglican and Cromwell and all that, the stuff that was going on at that time. And many of those records were lost, but
Yes.
many of them were saved because what Ireland and also Scotland, I think, you know, those countries that have a lot of Gaelic roots, they record their lineage from father to son. So basically, it's, you know, I've seen samples of, for example, I think it was the O'Reilly's family tree that goes back to the, wow, 300s, 200, you know, AD. That's amazing, you know. It was like word of mouth, but they would transmit that information, pass it down to their relatives, you know, the kids. And so it was amazing for me to find out that, you know. So it's, yes, and there's a lot
That's
of parishes
amazing.
still. I think the library, the International Irish Library, National Irish Library in Dublin, they have a lot of those records. I mean, not that far back, but most, some of them, you know, from the parishes, there are digitalized and they're online. You can go and search it for free. I think that's where I found that record that I told you about from my eighth great grandfather.
Amazing. As you know, in one of our segments in our podcast is to provide genealogy tip of the day. So if you were to provide some tips to someone who's Cuban and has found out that they have, you know, Irish lineage, what kind of advice would you give that person? How can they
So
get
my
started?
main thing is, and the number one for me that helped a lot, is to ask questions, to talk to your family, to, you know, see, you know, the abuelitos, the abuelitas in the family, then, you know, the grandparents, whatever, that maybe know something about it or heard stories about it, like I did with my grandfather. You know, that's the starting point. That way you can gather some sort of information, either the last name or names, you know, people that might have that last name. So, and then based on what you get, you gather that information, then you start doing your math. You start thinking, okay, so now I'm gonna start looking for information on this surname, this last name, you know, or, you know, and like I said, I know the research, I know that internet in Cuba right now is kind of starting, you know, and, you know, there's not that much that can be done, but internet, that's the other tool that I use, and it was very helpful to me going to, like I said, to the Ireland National Library, you know, online and look for those records, you know, at least type it in the last name and see what comes out. That's basically what I did, you know. I was lucky, I guess, but never give up. Always try to, you know, think positive and try to look for information and help from people that know and done this before. That's another thing, you know. There's a lot of clubs and groups on Facebook and out there that can help, you know, posting questions. And you never know what you're going to find out.
Are there any groups that you would suggest that they join that
Yeah,
can help
on
them?
Family Tree DNA, there's, you know, they have different like groups and stuff. And I was able to find an O'Halloran group there. And you know, I gathered quite information over there. You know, asking questions, and if you take your DNA test, you can compare, like, you know, the DNA kit's number to other persons, and do it through GeneNet, and you can see if you guys are related, and then you go from there. So wow, you know, we have some, you know, we're related. Let's see where this comes from. You know, if it's a great grandfather, great great grandfather, you know, who knows, maybe you can find some information useful and beneficial to you on your research.
Well, thank you so much, Adonis. You have given us a great history of your family, and thank you for the tips. And the last thing that I want to say is
The same
happy
to you.
St.
Thank you so
Patrick's
much for
Day.
having me on your, you know, on your podcast. It's the first time for me. I don't know. I'm a little nervous, but thank you so much. And maybe, you know, because we are related, we're cousins. I don't know if because through the Villarreal, but if you have Irish, who knows? Maybe we're related to the O'Halloran's. You know, that would be something cool to find out.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we are.
So thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoy another episode of the Cuban Family Roots Podcast. This podcast can be heard on various platforms such as Apple Cast, CastBox, Anchor, Spotify, Breaker, Radio Public, to name a few. We're always working to improve and bring topics of importance to you. Please drop us an email if you have suggestions. My email is cubanfamilyrootspodcast@gmail.com. We ask that you share this podcast with family and friends. This podcast, The Irish in Cuba, was produced by Aileen Vega and sound engineered by B. Torres. Be on the lookout for new episodes in April and May. Thank you for tuning in and happy St. Patrick's Day.